Welcome to a special edition of On the Rocks. We are hosting an audio replay of Prospector's June monthly mining roundup. In this episode, we're digging deep into the mesmerizing world of critical minerals. Join us as we explore the hidden gems powering our modern world, from smartphones to renewable energy technologies. The Prospector team shares insights and ideas, as well as shares what our latest mining data has to say. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn to watch the next live stream on July 31st. Let's dig in.
If it is live, hello everybody. Welcome to the latest monthly mining roundup. Let's go ahead and dive in now that we've got everybody here. Welcome everyone to the Prospector monthly mining roundup. Try saying that three times fast. We're super excited this month. We're going to dig into some critical minerals news, which I'm super excited about. But first, Alessandra, I wanted to toss it to you because you recently went to MinPro and had some cool stuff you wanted to share about.
Yes, there's a lot of cool stuff from the MinPro. MinPro is a conference that was held in Peru Tuesday and Wednesday. So before getting to that, we have received some good news in Peru, because the next World Mining Congress 2026 is going to be held in Peru, which is good news for us. We're going to have a huge conference coming our way. All right, so in MinPro, there were three main topics. First, it was the future of copper. They talk about the supply of copper from the countries in Latin America and the world in general. What are the risks and a potential shortage of copper between 2030 to 2035, according to the estimates with this energy transition? They also discuss some Latin American risks and opportunities, and obviously green mining, which is a topic that is on trend right now, and a few discussions on lithium in Peru. So I'm going to get into a little bit more details about the future of copper. As we know, copper is a critical material for an EV battery. It uses about 20 kilograms of copper, even more than lithium and cobalt, which I think it was an interesting fact to know. Also, according to the estimates on the demand of energy in general for solar energy, wind farms, onshore and offshore, overall, is expected by the 2015 an increase in about 30 between 200 and 300% increase on the megawatts demand of energy, and that would mean more demand of copper in for those free uses. So that's something that we need to keep in mind, because I have reviewed that trend from 2020 to 2050, and it's more than double the current production of copper. So that takes us to a second thing. There was a study made by JP Morgan and S&P in which they determined when we are going to be experiencing a shortage of copper, considering with this electrification trend. There is going to be one point in which, according to their studies, we are going to be the supply is going to be broken, and also there's going to be a change on the structure, because usually the demands manage or pulls the supply. It's going to be a structural change in which the supply is going to pull to have a direct effect on the demand of copper, considering all these trends. So, and that study, according to the questions I asked during the exposition, that includes only the increase of production or the project that we have right now in portfolio. However, we know that, yeah, it's just a personal opinion, with the growth of technology and with the increase of technology would allow us to get deeper into the mine or extract recover more mine from the rock, more copper from the rock, probably we can expand this shortage. However, if we compare with the increase on the energy, at some point we are going to be experiencing a shortage. Even if it's not in 2030 or 2035, we are heading that way with how we are managing our mines right now. So going to Latin American risks and opportunities, We know that the geopolitical tensions in Peru and Latin America in general, that's something that has been affecting the mining industry. Most of the country of the economies are trying to get a little bit harder on mining in terms of taxes, royalties, and properties. So that definitely also is related to the shortage of copper, because they are limiting the production from the copper main producers, which are Chile and Peru. And we also know that there's some turbulence on Congo, so it's make it harder. However, for the electrification, we're just talking about the renewables and the move toward electrification. We know that Peru or Latin America, compared to the more developed countries, have more clean energy, because we support a lot in hydro energy, and we are also investing on solar panels and wind energy. So in terms of electrification, I think we are on the right track, because we already have done half of the work. So that's a good opportunity for investors to look out at the projects in Latin America, because we have already done the work on ESG, just because of the sources that we had in hand, which is water, as we know. So those are the main risk opportunities. Also, the digitalization implies a risk, because governments need to develop new policies of privacy and respect of the information, and that may affect a little bit the transition into digital, depending on the country. In the case of Peru, Panama, and I don't remember the third country, and three countries in general from Latin America, they are more flexible in terms of using data and information of this digitalization. So that gives us an advantage compared to our countries. So that's overall 2 days of presentations, just consolidated in a few minutes.
That's great. Thanks for all those great insights, Alessandra. That was a very good summary. Very concise. I'm impressed. So with that, I figured we'd dive just a little bit into critical minerals, what they are, and kind of what Prospectors did and everything is saying about them. But first things first, to ask you two, what is your favorite critical mineral, or like what comes to mind when you think of critical minerals? Emily, what about you?
I mean, my favorite one, just because I worked on a really cool deposit with it, is rare earths, or are rare earths.
Yeah.
Never figure out if it's plural or singular in that context. I love rare earths, because I think, you know, what they're being used for with rare earth magnets and a lot of the cool technology that's coming out, I find really interesting, even just in how it's processed and stuff. So that would be my pick. Although I would also say copper, although I know we're going to chat. Some people consider that a critical mineral and other people don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Alessandra, how about you? Favorite critical mineral?
I think I have a similar answer. I will say the rare earth. I had the opportunity a few years ago working on in this research asked by the Critical Minerals Institute about the importance and how to recover rare earth elements from unconventional sources. That means secondary production. So I get deep into how the technology works between a rare earth and the importance in this energy transition. So I would say that those are my favorite minerals. And also copper, of course. Peru is one of the top producers of copper. We have about nine of the world top 30 copper mines. So I am very into copper, and I do consider it as a critical material, considering everything that I suppose about how much copper is used to produce EVs or energy in general.
What about you, Jeff? What's your favorite?
I, of course, am partial to PGEs. Can't help but platinum, palladium, platinum group elements. So people that are watching in the comments, drop your favorite critical minerals that you like to keep an eye on. And let's dive into what a critical mineral is. I'm going to have to bring up my definition here. So in the USA, the Energy Act of 2020 defines a critical mineral as a non-fuel mineral or mineral material essential to the economic or national security of the U.S. and which has a supply chain vulnerable to disruption. And so a lot of different countries have different critical minerals. I'm actually going to pull up screen here, kind of showing a comparison of different critical mineral lists and why they vary. And Emily, you probably have a little bit more insights on this, but what causes different countries and organizations to have different critical mineral lists? Is it just regions? Is it political security? Like, what are your insights on that?
Well, I think a big part of it goes back to the supply chain risk that you mentioned in that definition, Jess, right? So depending on where a country is currently sourcing minerals from and how reliant they are on maybe one specific source or one specific geography, that would increase their susceptibility, right, to it being a critical mineral. Because if you're only getting a certain material, like rare earths are a great example, if 99% of the U.S. rare earths are coming from China, then it becomes a critical mineral because you're sourcing so much of it from one particular place, right? I think in that sense, it's really more of a supply chain diversification challenge, whether it's domestic supply that you're trying to increase or just making sure that you have a diverse supplier network. I think that's usually where that list comes from. Of course, and the minerals have to be used in something that is strategic. So I think that's where some countries have different definitions of national security impact, as well as, you know, what does a secure supply chain look like? Some countries might be more comfortable with a much smaller group of suppliers because they just produce less domestically in terms of the products. That would be my guess.
Great. No, that's great. And like you said, there are a bunch of different definitions from all of these different countries. Canada's critical mineral list says, critical minerals are the building blocks for the green and digital economy. They're used in a wide range of essential products, from mobile phones to solar panels, electric vehicle batteries to medical and healthcare devices to military and national defense applications. Without critical minerals, there can be no green energy transition for Canada and the world. And so a bunch of the other lists and such all kind of revolve around those. So that is great. And why is it so important for these minerals to get this critical mineral status, right? We know that they're important, but why is it so important that we keep an eye on these particular ones?
Well, here in the U.S., at least speaking for U.S. domestic policy, and I know several other countries, it goes to support from the government, right, for the development of resources that can provide that. So that can come in a lot of different ways. It can be tax incentives, licensing, you know, different licensing pathways or support to get projects maybe licensed faster so you can get them into production. It also goes towards pricing and maybe recognizing that some minerals, there is a, even if it's not a high value mineral from a price perspective, there's a high value from a strategic perspective. So how can governments make sure that that supply continues to be there, even if the kind of just flat out market demand isn't there? You can't just go off of that because you might not end up with some of these more niche minerals being available when you need them. So I think it really comes down to government policy more than anything. Although, of course, if you're a company and you have any of these minerals, you're using it the heck out of it for marketing and stock promotion, right? And investor communications, making sure people understand what you're doing is critical to, you know, to the economy, critical to a country for a variety of different reasons. So I think, you know, basically government policy, but then flip that around and use it to market the heck out of your project is what we see going on.
Yeah. No, that's great for sure. And I just wanted to, before we dive deeper into some of these critical minerals in particular, we did recently do a prospector poll about the USGS critical minerals list. And Alessandra, as you mentioned earlier, copper is super critical, but it is not listed on the USGS critical minerals list. So I wanted to stir the pot in the comments a little bit and see if you all would like to see copper on the next critical minerals list or not. I do want to note uranium that we see on other critical minerals lists, such as Canada. is not on the USGS critical mineral list because it is considered a fuel mineral. So I did read that. So that's why they took it off in 2022. So just a heads up on that. But I thought we'd dig a little bit deeper into some of the more popular.
I see we've got Alex Mischenko watching right now. So Alex, feel free to chime in on that if you've got an opinion.
Yeah. Love to hear that.
First.
Awesome. So I thought we'd dig into just a couple of some of the more popular critical minerals and what we're seeing here. So the first one is lithium. The Prospector did recently do a lithium resource report on what our data has to say about lithium. And pop quiz, Emily and Alessandra, what is lithium mostly used for?
Batteries.
Woo! Good job.
And that would have been really bad if we got that one wrong.
any of those like soundboards that has like applause and drum rolls and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Confetti to come out of nowhere. Yeah.
There we go. So lithium is actually on all of the major critical minerals lists that we see. The most important uses are rechargeable batteries for our cell phones, laptops, cameras, and electric vehicles. It is a super hot topic. I don't know about you both, but I see lithium everywhere. And it's like a daily news thing.
Yeah.
So Prospector data, what we're seeing with lithium is that 22.8% of the total global lithium carbonate resources are located in Argentina. And Australia is home to 43.9% of the hard rock lithium resources. So that's crazy. And I'm interested to see, especially for me anyways, what comes out of the clay and the sedimentary lithium. I think there's some really cool stuff going on with that right now.
Yeah, and the processing technology has so much impact, I think, on where that will head, right? I mean, because with lithium, some of these other minerals, it's the finding of it and finding enough of it is certainly one part, but some of these things are challenging to process and recover at a high enough rate. So I think as that technology evolves also, some of these deposits have been more and more interesting.
Next up is cobalt. Again, we recently did another semi-recent cobalt report. You'll start to see a trend here on what Prospector's keeping an eye on. So cobalt is also on all of the major critical minerals lists, and its most important uses include rechargeable battery anodes and super alloys. What do you two think about cobalt? Are we seeing a big increase in exploration for it? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
What do you think, Alessandra, as the queen of data?
Yeah, definitely. I have seen more cobalt, but however, I think that most of them are just old mines. I haven't read more about more new discoveries in terms of cobalt. However, we know that with this turn into electrification of clean energy, we have turned towards critical minerals, including cobalt. We will have the trend in to be converting some resources into reserves or getting into these categories or resources some new cobalt. So I think that is the trend, and this is how we're going to, let's say, replenish or grow the cobalt global reserves.
Yeah, one thing I found really interesting, and again stirring the pot here a little bit, is in our Prospector resource report, deep sea mining operations account for approximately 33% of the global public company cobalt resources. So good or bad, I'm not saying anything on that. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. But you in the comments can feel free to drop some spicy comments in there and let us know your thoughts on that.
Deep sea it continues to be one of the most contentious topics that whenever we bring anything up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting statistic, sure.
Yeah. No, I thought that was very interesting. Next up, uranium. So uranium is seen on the Canadian critical mineral list. And like I said, it was removed from the USGS list in 2022 as it is classified as a fuel mineral, which does not meet the current guidelines. So I found that really interesting because I'm very, I'll say this out loud, like pro-uranium. I think it's really cool. So any uranium insights from either of you on things you want to say about uranium, or good, bad, should be added back to the list?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised by the fact that it came off because it's a fuel mineral. I mean, I get it, but like in that sense, is it if we're determining that things are critical because they're used in batteries and renewable energy generation, like if that's part of different countries' threshold, then by kind of definition, lithium and some of these other minerals would also not be. I mean, I guess it depends on how you determine the breakoff between energy and some of these other uses, right? Because I guess lithium is now an energy storage mineral, essentially, right? So I think that's surprising. I'm also a big fan of uranium. I think it gets tied into these larger conversations, of course, around nuclear energy, right? And I think that's where it gets way more complicated and folks like Alex would be, you know, the dynamics that go on there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the hard topic about talking about uranium is the risk about nuclear energy, about approving nuclear energy worldwide. And something else that I have discovered is that we have some uranium deposits in Peru, really close to the lithium project at the southern east of Peru. So that's something interesting because the American lithium responsible for that conference, they were talking about how we have a huge community have grown over surrounded by uranium for many years. And right now, everyone is turning towards uranium. And actually, something funny that they mentioned is that while they were making the exploration to quantify the deposit of lithium, they were requested to present also a radioactivity report because they thought that if they do a drill in the hole, all the radioactivity was going to be spread all over. So that was something funny that they, even though the contents of uranium precisely in the lithium deposits are really low. So that was something funny that the guy mentioned, because sometimes you may have from the government people that are not very involved or informed about lithium or uranium. So yeah, that may happen.
No, the rare earth carbonatite that I did work on in Afghanistan had uranium there as part of the deposit as well. And I was really amazed because we were down there with some young Marines who, frankly, were worried about sitting down on any of the rocks because they thought that the radioactivity could impact their ability to have children, right? I mean, and this is just like, nothing upgraded, nothing concerning, just kind of like normal radioactivity. So I think it goes back to the need for education also, right, on the real versus perceived risk of developing some of these deposits and how they're used. And just a shout out, if anybody's interested, we've got some uranium discussions on our On the Rocks podcast. If you go over to our podcast, we dive into that a little bit deeper with a few different guests.
Yeah, those are really great sources for further uranium info. Now, we're dropping into the hot topic of Chopper. So it was, like we have said multiple times, recently turned down by the USGS. And I have the quote here on why Chopper was turned down by David Applegate, which is the USGS director. So it says, while Chopper is clearly an essential mineral commodity, its supply chain vulnerabilities are mitigated by domestic capacity, trade with reliable partners, and significant secondary capacity. As a result, the USGS does not believe that the available information on copper supply and demand justifies an out-of-cycle addition to the list at this time. Thoughts? Comments? Let us know in the comments what your thoughts on this are. Do either of you two have any thoughts on copper? I know it is on other lists. But the USGS has caused quite the spice here, at least from what I've seen in the news.
Well, first of all, I'll say I'm a big fan of David because I was actually his intern at the American Geoscience Institute when I was in college, and I house sat for David, and he had the friendliest cat. So big fan of him and what he and the USGS do. But I will say on this, I think the challenge that I see with, I would assume that part of this is because some of those policy efforts, there is perhaps a desire not to have to apply all of those policy preferences and support to an industry that is as large as it is with copper domestically and with some of our partners, and maybe international partners of ours already have very active exports into the U.S. with copper that could be altered, right? If there is then a preference for domestic copper sources that would come with this kind of legislation. I think the other challenge becomes, I was just listening to the Northern Miners podcast from this week about Friedland's comments about copper and copper prices and where they could go. And I think one challenge is we might have a supply under current price dynamics that's sufficient, but like if copper goes up 4x, right? What does that do to us here in the US from an inflationary perspective and cost of producing stuff and having stuff at a price point that we need it at? I don't know enough about that side of the dynamic to kind of have an opinion, but I think it's a good point that if this gap is as big as everybody is saying it is, and pricing does eventually catch up from a commodity perspective, okay, it's not a critical mineral right now, but would it be a critical mineral if copper cost 4 times more than it does right now, right? Does that change the criticality definition and the dynamic? What do you really think? You're the finance person.
Yeah, I remember during that one of the conferences, they were talking about how it should become a critical material for the U.S. the copper. According to the statistics, if I remember correctly, up to 2021, only, let me check, just to be sure, only 44% of the copper used in the U.S. came from the imports of copper. However, in 2035, they anticipate that it's going to turn 60% of dependence. That means that they need to support, according to the policy or financial perspective, they need to support the copper industry in the U.S. because that trend makes it more expensive. That will have an impact definitely on the, let's say, the local access to copper, to energy, or any other important source for the U.S. And I remember that one of the persons at the conference, attendees of the conference, ask that same question. What is the impact that is going to have copper in a political or economic policy? And the answer was very simple. It's going to impact as a matter of people are going to be more dependable. We are seeing a shortage in world copper. So definitely is going to have a huge impact on the economy. And that's why many countries are including right now copper as a critical material. And also something that I can add is that while doing my research for the Critical Materials Institute, we found out that there are some rare earth elements or uranium or rare earth elements in general that can be extracted from copper as a secondary production. So that makes it once again copper as a center of the production, and that makes that will make the policy makers to have more focus on copper. And I think that is something that it should be an advance. For example, just putting something or going outside of copper just for a few seconds is just that in the case of uranium or extraction of rare elements from secondary production from phosphates, as an example, there are some countries that have already done a policy that allows them supports the extraction of the rare elements including uranium for these sources. And the U.S. has just started to take a look at those materials. So I think that's an opportunity that they cannot miss if we talk about copper. Although if we consider that the trends or the estimation that a shortage in 2035, it is really, really close by. So right. It's something that is going to affect the whole economy and the country. It's not going to be just a shortage of electricity or electricity from renewable sources or EVs. It's going to affect the whole economy of the country.
And I think I see Scott made a comment in the chat. you know, that copper is critical, no copper, no electrification, period. And I think that also goes back to the fact that if it's critical for other countries, right, and they're placing a priority on that supply, right, that also has huge impact on the U.S.'s access to that supply, because it may, that 60% may not still be there for the U.S. in 2030 or whatever, whichever year it was, because other countries may have already made a commitment to take that supply, right? And electrification is a huge priority for a lot of developing countries around the world, where we always kind of think of it in the U.S. as like, okay, we're already electrified, even with like EVs and greater electrification, but there are countries around the world that are just still trying to get basic electricity out to larger parts of their population, right? And trying to grow their infrastructure at a really rapid rate. So it's incredibly critical for them.
Those are great insights. I personally look forward to seeing where copper goes. My t-shirt, you can't see it, but it says "In Copper We Trust." From Butte, Montana. Shout out to 5518 there.
You have that. Yeah,
I literally have like four of the same t-shirt. I want it.
With the same or with different.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah. It's just my favorite. It's bad. So I have two more that I kind of thought would be interesting to look at that we haven't really looked deep into our prospector yet. But the next one is tin, which is only on the USA and Canada list. It is used as an alloy with other metals like lead or zinc or as a protective coating. It's also used in glass production, bearing alloys, coatings for steel containers, and electronic circuits. So curious, any random thoughts on tin? I know we kind of saw a little increase in news about tin a while back, but I've not seen much about it since.
I mean, my random thought on tin, I don't know how it might be connected in with this, but I believe tin is still considered a conflict mineral as well, right? Mm-hmm. Tin, tungsten, and gold. And at least here in the U.S., that was covered by the Dodd-Frank Act. So there were restrictions on or greater scrutiny on tin coming out of, you know, the Congo region in Africa, and companies that were buying tin had to be able to verify that it was not a conflict mineral. So I wonder how those two things might, you know, kind of coexist or what it's, you know, by defining it as a critical mineral as well as a conflict mineral, I wonder what dynamic that creates out there with tin companies that aren't in the Congo.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to dig a little bit more into. Alessandro, any tin thoughts? I do show that we are seeing 91 projects publicly traded globally on Prospector, with 45% of these projects in the grassroots stage.
Mm. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, actually, there's a tin mine. There was a tin mine in Peru, but it was suspended. I think it's still suspended due to the social conflicts. And I think that it had extended for far too long. So that made me think how attractive do they consider in Peru the tin industry? Because for other big mines of gold, silver, and also the copper mines, they were just the government and the companies are pushing to be reopened as soon as possible. And it didn't happen with tin. So just a random thought, but something that I think that how the country is seen at tin as an important. Let's not say critical, but probably an important material to have.
So I wonder then, it must be on the U.S. side. Is it just, do they say, is it because of our reliance on, like, it's a lack of a diverse supply chain, I would assume, for tin?
I did not dig very deep into it. I just was looking at the list. Yeah, I will have to dig deeper and put it in the comments once I dig a little bit deeper in on that.
Yeah, or if anybody watching knows the answer.
Yeah, let us know in the comments. Okay, this last one I never really considered and I thought was super interesting and a little bit funny. Helium. Mm. So it is on the Canadian, Australian, and EU list. It was removed from the USGS list in 2022. And it is used for more than just party balloons, which I did not know, which is really interesting. So it is used as a cooling medium for the Large Hadron Collider and the superconducting magnets in MRI scanners and NMR spectrometers. A lot of sciencey words happening there. It is also used to provide an inner protective atmosphere for making fiber optics and semiconductors, and used to inflate car airbags after impact. So any random helium thoughts other than just balloons from the two of you?
Well, I have another random fact from my international experience. Algeria, at least for a while, was like one of the largest producers of helium, which was like a random thing when I was working there. I was like, I had no idea that, again, I guess I had never really thought about who produced helium, right? I find it that I guess it's those niche ones that have this very specific use that you really can't substitute anything else for, right? All of those science-y applications you listed.
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting. I had to Google how helium was mined because I never considered it, I guess. I just thought that was really interesting. So as we mentioned, we do have the Prospector commodity reports. They're up on prospectorportal.com. If you want insights into any of the other critical minerals that we mentioned, those are free to download completely. And so we are going to take a quick pause for some questions, but I thought it might be fun while we're waiting for some questions or comments from the audience to give you both a critical minerals pop quiz.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. I'm ready. Okay. So this is easy. What was removed from the USGS list in 2022 as it is considered a fuel mineral?
Uranium.
Nailed it.
Paid it.
We need little buzzers. Okay, so these ones might be a little bit harder, but I think they're really interesting. How many minerals are on the USGS list currently?
I'm going to guess 50 for some reason.
Alessandra, you want to guess?
She might be frozen.
She's frozen.
Okay, you are correct with 50. Nailed it. India just came out with its new list. Any idea how many were on there? It was in the news recently.
No idea.
30.
Oh, so a lot less. Okay.
A lot less than USGS, but I believe they had 12 or 15 to begin with.
Oh, okay. So they
went up. Yeah. Yep. Alessandra's messing me. She's having some connectivity issues. So these are all you. How many are on the Canadian critical mineral list?
As soon as the quiz starts, Alessandra.
I know.
And leaves me.
Let's see.
I would estimate that it would be, I guess, because they've got so much more domestic supply than we do in the U.S., so I'd assume they have a less of a critical list, so I would say maybe 40.
31. Oh. I'm good. You're really good at this. Man, it's like you've been studying.
I run a company that deals with mining.
Yeah. Whoa. All righty. And then finally, you guys can each answer this one. No need to compete here. Name an energy transition critical mineral.
Lithium.
Good. Alexandra, what do you got?
Copper. No, just kidding. It should be.
I mean, it shouldn't be. I'm a consider. I mean, in some lists, you know.
Yeah, I'll say lithium. I think graphite or EV is also a critical material.
Yep, that's what I was going to say as well. Cool. So those were my pop quiz questions. You guys got 100% nailed it. I'm not seeing any questions from the audience. Of course, you can feel free to reach out to any of us at Prospector. And we look forward to the next monthly mining roundup. Any final insights or thoughts from you two?
I would just remind everybody that if you want to go check out all the projects for any of these minerals, all you have to do is go in and click the little filter button and pick whichever critical mineral you want to look at. And it'll show you all of the projects globally that we've got for that mineral. So super, super easy to kind of see the whole list globally, and you could filter by country and stage and all that good stuff. But yeah, so it makes it really easy to kind of see where they all are and what stage they're in and all that good stuff. So then you got the cool little spinny globe so you can zoom in and out and check it all out.
Yeah. No, it is super easy for sure. Alessandra, what about you? Any final thoughts or insights or shout outs?
I think that continue with what Emily was saying about Prospector. You can also find the lithium, cobalt, and copper report. So if you haven't checked them out yet, you can go back and see all our trends and everything that we provide for you.